want to first and foremost dedicate the shir Le'ili Nishmas, my grandmother, whose yahrzeit is today, Cyril Bas Zev Wolf, and also for Refuah Shleima, for Rivka Bas Kayla, and for Esther Malka Bas Chasha Batsheva. I thought we would speak about something to do with the how to use Elul properly. Elul is both a 30-day preparation time for Rosh Hashanah, and it is also a 40-day process that leads to Yom Kippur. And in the past, we've discussed the two aspects of its 30-day aspect to Rosh Hashanah and 40-day aspect to Yom Kippur. I'm not going to go into that now. Usually, the Sedra of Re'eh precedes the month of Elul. Like this year, Shabbos Mevorachim Elul was Seder Re'eh. And I think the first sentence in Re'eh can give us a good understanding of what we need to do to prepare for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur properly. The Torah starts out with the singular Re'eh. See. Let me quote you the whole sentence and then we'll go word by word. Re'eh Anochi Nosein Lifnechem Hayom Bracha Uklala. See that I place before you today a blessing and a curse. The first word, see, is in the singular. And it doesn't mean to look with your eyes, because you can't see blessings and curses with your physical eyes. Whenever the word re'eh can't mean to look physically, it means to contemplate, to think deeply. See with your mind's eye. And in order to do that, you have to think. Think about this deeply. Now, why do you have to think deeply to see a blessing and a curse? Blessing and curse seem to be very obvious. The answer is that that is not the case. What is a blessing to one person may seem as a curse to another person. Someone who has the right outlook on life, who has the right values, the right standards, the right understanding, see Shabbos Kodesh as a tremendous blessing, tremendous opportunity. Yet to someone looking from the outside, who never kept the Shabbos, imagine Shabbos to be a very, very limiting and oppressive day. So if you don't have the right outlook, if you don't have the right values, if you don't have the right experiences, what to one person is a blessing, to another person is a curse. So you need to think deeply to set your priorities, your standards, your values, your hashkafa straight in order to be able to really see what's a blessing and what's a curse. And also, a person is very affected by his bias. People who sin are biased by their sins. And people who fail to do certain mitzvahs are biased by that. And the Rambam says that sin is a sickness. It's a spiritual sickness. And just like in physical sicknesses, sometimes a person who's sick experiences bitter things to be sweet and sweet things to be bitter. When you're spiritually sick, it's the same way. And that which is normally bitter to you seems sweet, and what is normally sweet to you seems bitter. Famous story of how bias, how negius, can change a person's entire perspective. They tell the story of the drunk alcoholic who many times his children found him staggering in the streets, wallowing in the mud in a drunken stupor. And they were ashamed that their father conducted himself like this. So they waited until one day he was sober, and they took him out down to the Bowery, and they showed him a person in a drunken stupor wallowing in the mud. And they said, Tati, that's how you look when you're also in a drunken stupor. He says, wait, I have to go say something to this man. So he ran over to the drunk, and he whispered something in his ear. And the children said, wow, we must have merely made an impression. He's trying now to give mussar to this drunk. So he said to him, Tati, what did you tell that man? So they asked him where he got such good brontham. Where did he get such good liquor? Person's bias gives him a completely different perspective than someone without the bias. So the first stage of being able to deal with our sins and to be able to start a new year is re'eh. And everybody has their own personal things they have to look at. That's why it's in the singular. No two people are the same. Two people have the same bias, the same problems with priorities and standards and values and hashkafes, and the sins that we all do are different. So therefore, everybody has to write their perspective in their own personal way. So the Torah exhorts us, re'eh, take a personal look at your situation and see how you can make it possible to put on the right lenses that you'll be able to see what is a blessing and what's a curse and not see them in a distorted, convoluted way. That's the first thing. Second thing, Anochi. Moshe Rabbeinu says, see that I'm putting before you a blessing and a curse. Aside from a person and on his own individual level, ascertaining and putting into perspective his outlook on life, you need leaders also. You need a Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? One reason is because you have to learn. You can have all the right intentions, but if you're ignorant and you have no idea what's right and what's wrong, you'll never see blessing and curse properly because you won't have enough information. So aside from all of the mussar that a person needs to be able to put his outlooks and his values into perspective, that's a very personal thing. You also need someone to teach you who knows more than you, who'll be able to point out factually what's a blessing and what's a curse, what's right, what's wrong, what's necessary, what's not necessary. If you have no idea what's right and what's wrong, you'll never know what's a curse and what's a blessing. That's one reason you need a Moshe Rabbeinu. The second reason is because what is right and what is wrong is not absolute. It really depends on time, place, and many other factors. What could be right and a blessing in one place may be at another time, in another place, a curse. What to one person may be the right thing and a blessing, to another person may be the wrong thing and a curse. Everything is very, very subjective and depends on time and place. An example, harmless example, I guess, is that learning Chumash and Tanakh, right, what could be wrong with that? Right? It's Torah. Yet when the Haskalah, the so-called Enlightenment movement, wanted to replace the learning of Torah, of Gemara, of Talmud, and they said that the only thing significant about the Torah is Tanakh, and they learned it in a scholarly way, in a critical way, not as Torah, not as divine, but as some other critical study, and that became a temptation away from Torah and away from religion, then the great rabbis shunned the learning of Tanakh in yeshivas because in that era, at that time, it represented something wrong. And they were 100% right. Because in that place, at that time, it represented something that was negative to Yiddishkeit. So even Chumash can be something negative at a certain time in a certain place. I always like to give the example, I'll mention it again just to lighten things up a little bit, of how time and place can make a difference, whether something is right or something is wrong. When I was growing up, when I was a teenager, the Beatles were the rage of the time. And the drummer, these are not the little six-legged variety. These were the two-legged variety. They were a band, in case you don't want to admit that you know what I'm talking about. Right. And his name was Ringo Starr. And he was a drummer, and he happened to have long hair. And that started a fad in the world where, aside from hippies who used to live in the deserts and communes, respectable men started to grow long hair. And whatever affects the Christian world affects the Jewish world too, and even the yeshiva world. And I was in a yeshiva high school in Miami, and some of my friends stopped taking haircuts. And after a few weeks, it looked like a co-ed school. And my rabbonim called in these friends, and they told them on a Friday that you better go get a haircut today for the covered Shabbos, because if on Sunday you still have that head of hair, don't show up for class. You are suspended until you get a haircut. You cannot be in this yeshiva with long hair. So their answer was, but Rebbe, a Nazir has long hair and he's holy. We want to be holy. They said, you ever see a picture of the Ragatshover Gom? He had a long, big head of hair because he never took a haircut because he didn't want to take off his yarmulke and stop learning Torah. We want to be like the Ragatshover. That did not impress my Rabbanim. And they told them, Nazir and Ragatshover, right, are irrelevant over here. We want you to take a haircut. Why? Because if you have a long, it could be that there's nothing intrinsically wrong with growing, for a man to grow a long, long hair. Could be. There may be problems. Okay? There are problems. But let's say there aren't. I mean, 100% okay. And therefore, the Ragatshover Gaon could have a big head of hair, and a Nazir can have a big head of hair. But if you are growing that hair to be like the Beatles, that makes it treif like Chazer. In this time and in this place, it has this meaning. And therefore, it's no good. And another time, another place, it may be 100% perfectly okay. If you want another example, which I think I've given here in the past, when I first came to Eretz Israel, so after Yom Kippur, I went to buy sukkah decorations in Mea Shearim. And I was shocked. Because the sukkah decorations they were selling in Mea Shearim were Christmas decorations. Not like Christmas decorations, but the real thing in their original packaging. And all these Mea Shearim Yidden were buying it up, right? And they couldn't think of anything nicer than these sukkah decorations. And I was sure that Chol HaMoed, I would walk down Mea Shearim and see a sukkah with a little shepherd and a little baby and somebody tell me, look, it's a beautiful decoration of a Gansa Mishpacha over here. And the truth is, these people have no idea what it represents. They never saw Christmas decorations. Here in Eretz Israel, all you see is Muslims. They never saw a Christmas tree. And I'm sure that if they would go to America in December, they would say that the Goyim stole our sukkah decorations. So probably in Mea Shearim, there's absolutely nothing wrong with using these sukkah decorations. But if you use them in America, it's chukas ha-goyim. You're copying the goyim. So it depends on time and place, what is a curse and what's a blessing. And it depends on a lot of other factors. For one person, something may be the best thing for that person. And that exact same thing may be terrible for another person. A school that's good for one person may be the way away from Yiddishkeit for a different person, but the way to Yiddishkeit, a ladder. For one person can be climbing up the ladder, and one person could be going down the same ladder. The same ladder can be a curse to one person and a blessing to another person. So you need a Moshe Rabbeinu, you need a leader to help you know what's a blessing and what's a curse. First, to give you information, and secondly, to apply it to your specific situation. It's not enough for you just to have all that introspection on yourself. Yeah?
When I was growing up, the Shabbos soup was a navy blue soup with a
I hear. Okay. Today, black is beautiful. Okay. The next word. Re'e Anochi So you need that personal introspection and deliberation. You need a leader, Anochi, Nosein. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I am giving you a present. Nosein lifneichem hayom bracha uklala. I'm giving you a present. Bracha and klala. And I understand that bracha is a present. Why is the klala a present? So first of all, the klala is also present if you look at it properly. Because the klala is a deterrent. It gives you incentive not to want to do something bad. So if you know what the klala is, that in itself is a blessing. It's a blessing to be able to see what's a klala so you'll stay away from it. But there's more to it. Having the ability to do that which is blessed and the ability to do what which is cursed is itself a present. I'll give you an example. There's a bracha that a father makes when his child becomes, when his son becomes bar mitzvah. Baruch sheptorani me'onsho shalazeh. And one of the commentaries explains that in the following way. Until the bar mitzvah, the father gets punished to a certain degree for the child's sins. Once he's bar mitzvah, the child gets punished for his own sins. So the father makes a bracha. Thank God the kid's going to get it now and not me. Now that doesn't sound too great for a Jewish father to say. A Jewish mother never could say that, right? A Jewish mother, when her kid's 98 years old, right, takes anything that could possibly happen to my child should happen to me. Not, I'm happy the kid's going to get it and not me, right? What kind of father is that? The Rabbanu Shel Olam doesn't function like that as a father to us. It says the Rabbanu Shel Olam is like an eagle. He puts us on his wings and says, let the arrow go into me and not into my children. And here's a father making a bracha on his kid's bar mitzvah. Thank God he's going to get punished and not me. What does it mean? So I wanted to explain it in the following way. When a child begins to walk, everybody stands there and they're smiling and happy and watching the kid take his first step and second step and then falling down and then getting up and falling down again. Why are they happy? The kid's falling down. Do you know that it's a lot safer to crawl? There's much less chance of falling when you're crawling than when you're walking. So why are they happy if the kid's walking and now he has all these chances of falling down? The answer is because people weren't meant to crawl through this world through their life. They were meant to stand on their own 2 feet and walk through life. Yes, that involves a risk that you may fall. But the fact that you can walk is worth the risk. Similarly, people weren't put in this world to be dependent on other people's free choice. They're supposed to have their own free choice. And true, because you have free choice, you can also do the wrong things, and you can get punished for that. We're hoping that the child won't fall. We're hoping that the child be able to walk steadily. But the fact that he can walk, even though there's a chance he'll fall, is in itself a simcha. Similarly, when a child is on his own, and he's capable of having his own punishment and his own reward, that's a reason for a simcha. I'm happy that I am no longer responsible for this child because that's not what he's supposed to be in this world. He's supposed to be a responsible person on his own. But God gave him 13 years to learn how to be responsible. Baruch Hashem, he started to stand on his own 2 legs. Yes, he could be punished. I'm hoping he'll never do anything wrong that he'll be punished for. But the fact that he's capable of being punished and rewarded is something to be happy about. He's a responsible person. And therefore, both the bracha and the klala, the fact that God gave us the ability to get a blessing or a curse, is in itself a matana. It's a present. That in itself is a present. So, anochi nosein lifneichem. Now it says the plural. I'm giving it in front of all of you. I'm giving it to all of you, which we started out with an individual. Re'ei, you personally look. Now we're talking about everybody. Why? Because a person, when he anticipates and ponders his blessing and curse, what he can do in this world, positive and negative, can't only take into consideration how it's going to affect him. He has to take in consideration how it's going to affect other people too. There's a Gemara that usually is not learned the way I'm going to tell you. But I think that this is a possible explanation of this Gemara too. The Gemara says, Bo v'naseh cheshbono shel olam. Let us make the accounting of the world. Schar mitzvah keneged hefseda, v'hefsed aveira keneged schar. You should take in consideration the loss of a mitzvah opposite its reward, and the reward of a sin opposite its loss. Now, the normal way of learning that Gemara is, let's make the tally, the accounting of the world that everybody in the world has to make. Mitzvahs sometimes cost money, sometimes they cost more than that. They're time-consuming, they're difficult, they may sometimes even demand your life. But make the tally. What is going to be the ultimate reward for that mitzvah opposite the loss you're going to incur? And realize that the benefit outweighs the detriment. The same thing goes with an avera. Averas may give you a benefit. You may steal and get money. You may do averas and get tremendous pleasure. You may have tremendous benefit from sins. But weigh against that the punishment you'll get for that sin, and the punishment always outweighs the benefit. That's the normal way of learning this Gemara. I want to say a completely different idea. And the idea is the following. Bo v'nase cheshbono shel olam. Don't only make your own personal tally of mitzvahs and averas. I'm going to do a mitzvah because I'm going to get rewarded. I'm not going to do an avera because I don't want to get punished. That is a legitimate concern. But there's more to it. There's cheshbono shel olam. There is the tally, the accounting of the world. Schar mitzvah. Don't only look at the reward you'll get for doing a mitzvah. Look at the loss the world will have by you not doing that mitzvah. Put it into a more worldly, universal perspective. Don't do it only because you'll be rewarded. But realize that if you don't do that mitzvah, the world's going to lose out something. Other people may suffer because of it too. Because there'll be one mitzvah missing in the world. And don't only refrain from doing an avera because you're going to lose out. But realize, or you'll get rewarded for not doing the avera. Look also what loss would be to the world if you would do that avera. You have to take in consideration how your personal bracha and your personal klala affect other people too. You have to take that in consideration. And sometimes, I'm going to add, maybe what's really a bracha for you, but maybe sometimes you have to yield on that bracha because the klala it would cause other people outweighs the bracha that you have to get for yourself. Sometimes you have to yield on a mitzvah because it will harm other people more than you'll benefit. And sometimes even, you have to do an avera, sometimes, the Torah says, because the results to other people, if you don't do it, would be devastating, and therefore that's what's demanded. Rarely, but that could be the case sometimes. So therefore, in order to know what's bracha and klala, don't only look at your own personal, self-centered bracha and klala. Look how it affects the entire world. Yes. Yes? Oh, can I give an example? Oh, I thought you wanted to give an example. Can I give an example of which part? Yes. I'll tell you something. Somebody asked me on Shaila. We have a minyan early in the morning so people can get to work who have to leave early and can't daven later. And sometimes in the winter, that minyan starts before the time you really allowed the chatchila to start davening. It's only b'di'evit, okay? And the people who have to come to that minyan many times are not a minyan themselves. So they need one or two other people to join. Somebody asked me, should I daven what's b'di'evit? I could daven at 7:30, and that is the more proper way of davening. If I would be alone, right, I wouldn't daven at 10 to 6 in the morning, because it's too early. Okay, it's permissible, but it's only b'di'evit. It's only it's not the ideal kind of davening. So here, yes, your davening may not be ideal, and you could daven in a more ideal part. But you are going to cause that other people be able to have a minyan. They'll be able to daven the minyan. Without you, they wouldn't have a minyan. So maybe it's kedai for you to compromise on your better davening that more people should be able to have a minyan and daven with a minyan. That could be necessary. Okay, I'm not saying that's the halacha or not, but that is a possibility. That's an example. Okay, next. Lifneichem. Hayom. Next word is today. And I think there's three meanings to that today. Firstly, what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. The Rabbeinu Yonah says that a person who wants to repent, he wants to reorganize his life, And that's what we're talking about over here, right? Regaining a perspective on life and seeing the blessing and the curse and eventually changing the way that you function. Person who wants to do that has to start by closing his eyes to his past. Because if you don't, you're going to feel anchored to the sins of the past and never be able to feel that you can free yourself from them. So the first thing is, consider yourself a newborn person who has no past. You're starting now a new leaf, which makes it easier to start off and change. Because if you feel yourself anchored to the past, you can't change. And that's why Rosh Hashanah comes before Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah, we make a new start. We don't speak about sins. We don't speak about the past. We only speak about the ideal. And then, after you've made that start, then you can look back and correct the past. That's Yom Kippur. The example they give is when a person is in the mud, he can't start wiping his clothing off. First you have to get out of the mud. Then you can start wiping the mud off. First thing is, get out of the mud. Right? Start anew. Make it as if you never had a past, you just have that day is the beginning of your life. It's the first day of a new leaf that you're turning over. So that's the first thing. Hayom. Second thing of Hayom is that people say that I have time, I'll do it tomorrow, next day. No, only consider that you only have this day. How do you know you have more time? If you think you have plenty of time, then you'll never change. But if you think that I only have this day, this is it, whatever I do today, that's it, and I don't have it tomorrow, then you will feel that things must be done in lo achshav emosayif, not now, when? But if you feel you have a lot of days, then you may never get around to doing anything. You'll procrastinate. So that's the second thing in Hayom. Hayom, look at today, don't look at yesterday. Today, don't look at tomorrow. Only today. And I have a third thing that Hayom means. And that is, many times people say, I'll do it, but I've done this many times. How long is it going to last? How long is it going to last? Right? I'm going to put in all this effort. And you know, it may work till Rosh Hashanah, till Yom Kippur. Is it going to last past Motzi Yom Kippur, past Sukkot? Right? What's it worth? Even if it's not going to last more than one day, it's kedai. Whatever a person accomplishes in this world, they ask one of the big Bali Musar, used to give tremendous Musar discourses, and they asked him, how long do you think your Musar Shmuz has an effect on your students? He said, I'll tell you the truth. He used to give the shmuz before Maariv. He said, if it affects them just that they say Baruch Hu by Maariv a little bit differently than they would have said it without the shmuz, that's fine for me. That's fine. I don't expect it to make more of an impression than that. If it does, Matov Manoim. That's also something that's worthwhile. That's also Kedai. So Hayom means, look at today, don't look at the past. Look like you're starting a new leaf. Don't look at tomorrow because there may not be a tomorrow, and realize that if you don't do it today, you may never be able to do it. And look at the fact that even if what you're going to accomplish won't last more than today, it's also kedai. It's also kedai to do something, even if it won't be long lasting. It should be. But even if not, it's worth it for the short term benefits also. And finally, bracha uklala, that now you'll be able to look and see the bracha and the klala. The Sfarno says, at this point you should realize that there's nothing in between. There's nothing parav when it comes to Yiddishkeit. Either it's milchiks or it's fleishiks, and when it comes to good and bad. Something, the same thing that can be used for good can be used for bad. And therefore everything in this world is either good or it's bad. There's nothing in between. There's nothing parav. If you're not using it as a mitzvah, then something's missing. It's an aveira. And if it's not an aveira, then you should be using it in a positive way. There's no mid-ground. It's either positive or it's negative. You can use the thing in a positive way. If you're not, then that in itself is negative. It's bracha uklala, not bracha oklala. Not a bracha or a curse. It's a bracha and a curse and the same thing. You have to decide if you're going to tilt it this way or tilt it that way. And this bracha and klala was given when they entered Eretz Yisrael. There were two mountains, like they walked through the mezuzah. of the entrance to Eretz Yisrael. Before you get down to living in Eretz Yisrael, get your perspectives, know what the bracha is, know what the klala is, using all the things that we mentioned. Same thing, we're entering a new year. Before you enter the new year, and you want to start working on the things of the past and the things of the future, first get your perspectives, your outlooks, your hashkafas set, so you'll know how to deal with the things of the past and the things of the future and be able to start a new year, libracho, l'shalom, and all of us should have a very happy, healthy, good year.